Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's bet.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
The second Super Bowl podcast of the week, and we have three guests. Welcome in. I am Doug Kazarian from Atlanta. Kai, how are you, my man?
Good, man. Good. Well, freezing up here in the Northeast, but good the same.
So we have a stacked lineup here. We're going to have Bill Barnwell, who wrote a couple excellent pieces, one on prop bets and another on the game itself, breaking it all down. He's going to give us some insight as to how he sees the game playing out. And he has some prop bets as well that he likes. So fitting that we're going to discuss that here on the podcast. Also, Michael Lombardi from Vegas Stats and Information Network, former executive in the NFL. Really good breakdown of what he expects. He used to work with Bill Belichick and knows this game cold. So really good to kind of get insight from a guy who's been there and really understands it. And then, of course, a man who needs no introduction, John Murray, oddsmaker, the Superbook, Mr. Director, will join us. So fun stuff. Now, Kai, I was a little worried that you wouldn't be here for the pod in the wake of the Porzingis news.
Oh, man, come on, man. I'm a Nets fan, as you know, so anytime I get an opportunity to laugh at the Knicks, I take it.
Oh, I know, just ridiculous. So for our listeners, we taped these three interviews, and Murray was first, and it happened before the Porzingis news, so we did not get to ask him about odds adjustments and things like that, in case you're wondering. Just a housekeeping note on that front. But a lot of good stuff coming up. It's a long pod, but for anyone who's ready for the Super Bowl and needs some prop bets, Murray's got some excellent ones in terms of what the sharps are on. So he's going to let us know all the sharp bets. He's even got a UFC play for the weekend, and then Lombardi breakdown, and then obviously Bill Barnwell with some prop bets. So hope you, even if you have to listen in parts, but it really is interesting stuff coming up here on the pod. Kai, you ready for this?
Let's do this.
Let's do it.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a racing sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
Surprised it was only a week ago, feels like yesterday, where we were in person in your office, Mr. Director, taping this podcast, but now we are in separate time zones.
Yeah, I'm back in the office, but no DK, no Ed today. I'm by myself. It's not going to be as much fun without the fellas in here.
It was great to be there and talk about the podcast, the Super Bowl props, everything. And I'm in Atlanta, actually, at the Super Bowl. I was there for Radio Row today. And yesterday, I'll be flying back to Bristol tomorrow, but it is time to discuss the Super Bowl, my man. First of all, great job by the Westgate giving us all the access. Everyone's been very complimentary of the video piece and the print piece. And so I know you were too busy with the suits to comply, but nonetheless, we appreciate the efforts.
We were just watching it. We were just watching it. I was sitting in the back room with some of the guys. Randy was back there, and we had a laugh that they didn't, I guess they cut out any interview segments with Jeff Sherman. But, Ed thinks that Jeff just used too many fancy words and nobody would have understood it, so they had to leave it on the chopping block, so to speak.
Well, Jeff's agent was demanding too much, and that's what it was. So
say no more. That's not the first time I've heard that. Yeah.
You know, TV is very elaborate, as they learned the hard way.
It is,
I mean, the amount of footage we shot compared to what we used, I mean, you can just imagine. We shot that for, 3 days? And it ended up being a 4.5-minute piece. So we could have done it's funny, I was talking to a senior producer of features, and he almost wants to do a documentary, like a 50, an hour documentary on the professional bettors, because there's a whole layer to this that we did not dive into. I did a little bit in my print piece that was over 2,000 words. But, I mean, just the concept of arbitraging and the method of the madness on that front, and which, you as an odds maker factor that in so much, was kind of left out. Like, we kept it sort of the fun concept of it.
I thought it came out really well. It was really good. It was good exposure for us here at the Superbook. And, you know, those guys deserve a lot of credit for the work that they do on those props. Everybody here works very hard on the Super Bowl, but certainly those three guys, Ed, Jeff, and Randy, deserve the lion's share of the credit for our prop menu here at the Superbook.
And you've done that before, right? You've done the grind?
Oh, yeah. I've done it. I've done it several times. It's an experience.
It was fun to observe because the camera didn't show it, but I was there for the Todd Gurley discussion. I was actually on the couch and wow. Just the back and forth. And it's funny because when you put up a number, it's easy to say, oh, just put up this. But you realize like there's a lot of money going to come pouring in one way or the other. So even a couple yards off is very, very important.
I can date myself a little bit. The first time I did that, I went to Ed's house, Ed's old house, for the Cardinals-Steelers Super Bowl. And we used to do it on the day after the conference championship games that Monday to get all the prop numbers out in time for on Tuesday night. But Ed decided a few years ago that was just pushing it too hard and started doing it on Tuesday and Wednesday to get them out Thursday. So we've been doing that for the last several years. But yeah, the Cardinals, Cardinals-Steelers was my first one.
Thanks for bringing up the worst beat of my life.
Yeah, I was just a young man back in those days. Yeah, that the great James Harrison play, that was awesome. We all
Arizona Cardinals first half.
All of us had that. All of us here at the book had that. And we did win the Cardinals. I think I had plus +7 for the game. Does that sound right? Something
yeah.
like that. I know we won the game bet. That was a very successful Super Bowl for the house.
I had first half because rumor had it at the time Mr. Billy Walters was on the first half. So I was able to grab the good number. And then I also had the Cardinals at 35-1. And I believe I want to say I bought that before the playoffs started. It wasn't even like during the race because they had to go at Carolina, and that's when we got the Jake Delhomme 5 interception game. So.
I remember that game. They were at Carolina in the divisional round, and they were close to a 10-point underdog in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And they won easily. And then they played Philadelphia the next week at home. And I think the Eagles got out to a big lead. One of those two teams got out to a big lead, and then the other one came back. Arizona ended up winning in the end. And the AFC Championship game that year, I believe, was the Troy Polamalu interception return for a touchdown to cover the spread. Steelers beat the Ravens in the AFC title game.
I may or may not have bought a BMW after that game.
Yeah, so that brings back fond memories. But that was my first experience of helping Ed and the team with the prop numbers.
Yeah, that postseason had some highs and lows. Let's put it that way. And the Polamalu pick six was the high. The end of the first half was not, and even the 35-1. That was because remember the long touchdown for Fitzgerald. I'm jumping up and down, but they scored too quickly.
Yeah, man, Larry Fitzgerald was incredible that season, wasn't he? I mean, I know he was really the guy that carried that Arizona team. Yeah, he was awesome in the Super Bowl.
All right, buddy, let's talk this Super Bowl. So I was actually back there with you guys when you opened the Patriots as a dog, and now they're 2.5. Where do you see this line going between now and kickoff?
We're starting to see some sharp money trickle in on the Rams slowly, taking plus +125, taking Rams plus +2.5. I think the number is going to close more like New England 1 or 1.5. To me, there's just very little separating these two teams. I think a more appropriate line for this game is really pick 'em. And I said before, I thought the Rams at plus +3 -110 was a good bet. I don't think.
Yeah, no, really. Right. It touched it. What was the report? 17 minutes it touched. And then I think another time it touched for a few minutes.
Another book had it on Friday, I believe. There was a plus +3. So,
yeah, Mr. Director, I've had to put in my pick, and I took the Rams plus the points and some ESPN.com things and stuff like that. It's basically I said this, like the Patriots like looked great on that final drive, but let's not forget they faced the 31st ranked defense and a team that fired its defensive coordinator. And if D Ford's not offsides, then we're talking about maybe Brady's time to retire because he didn't have a great game.
Yeah, we don't need to rehash that last drive, but basically New England ran the same play over and over again, and Kansas City was too dumb to figure out how to stop it. And it cost their defensive coordinator his job. So
I think Wade Phillips is going to be different, right? I mean, there's a reason the Rams are power rated higher.
Yeah, I think the Rams are one team where you've got Sean McVay running the offense, Wade Phillips running the defense. This is not a coaching staff that's going to get outmaneuvered or severely outcoached the way that the Chargers did by New England and the way that Kansas City did to an extent by New England. I don't think that'll happen with the Rams. I think the Rams are a very well-coached team as well.
So part of the piece, which was the focal point of the piece, I should say, was the prop bet. So let's talk props.
Sure.
You guys took over 400 grand opening night, which is just insane with two grand limits. Although that obviously is like some minus 300s and 400s, and people laid 8 grand to win too. But what movement? There's been one prop we talked about with Kai on Monday, and he's just laughing at me. But I'm not saying it's going to hit. I'm just saying it was ridiculous value, and I think the mods shifted accordingly. So. What odds?
Which one? I'm sorry. Which one was that? That was the ridiculous value.
That was the no touchdown in the first half.
No touchdown in the first half.
Correct. 100-1 is what you guys opened it, and it was 18-1 last time I checked.
Well, if there's no touchdown in the first half, I don't think there'll be too many people here complaining. I can tell you right now that our worst outcome in the player to score the first touchdown is that there will be no touchdown. That's our worst outcome in that particular index prop, but. If there's no touchdown in the game, I have a feeling that we're going to do very well in this game overall. So even though we would take a bath on that prop, we would do quite well for the game.
And that's for the game. I thought there's like a legitimate. Like, I don't think 1 in 100 is the right likelihood. I thought 30 or 40 to 1.
That's fine. I mean, it's just that's one of those things where like I have it pulled up right now. Player to score the first touchdown of Super Bowl 53 and. It's a big number that we would lose if they didn't score, and it's the same thing in the first half. But, you know, we were talking to the J.A. Cornegay and myself. We're talking to the president of our casino here at the Westgate yesterday, and basically we told her was we want this game to be as boring as possible. Boring equals good. If nothing happens, the book will do very well. We want to run back the Denver-Carolina Super Bowl every year.
Yeah, I bet. So let's. So what are the props that have moved the most?
Well, I can give you a couple that we've seen some sharp money on. The very first bet we took last Thursday night when we opened up the betting was Tom Brady over 282.5, and we've seen more sharp bets come in, including another one again this morning. I think the guy this morning went over 302.5. Right now we've got Brady at 305.5. So certainly a pretty significant move there.
Well, hold on a sec. The reason that's is because I think another property had like 311.5.
Right, but. But the very first bet over 282.5 was, I think, before anybody else had it up, unless I'm wrong about that.
I don't think so, but I think maybe they were just taking a position. Because I know about the wheelings and dealings of those props on that particular action.
The guy who bet it this morning is not somebody that I think of as just an arbitrage guy. I consider it – because, like, we have guys that are arbitrage guys, and we have guys that are sharp guys, and we classify them differently. And the guy that made the bet this morning is somebody that I consider to be more of a sharp player. Now, I'm not saying he isn't playing for a middle somewhere. I don't know exactly what his method is on every bet he makes. But in the past, he's really been a guy that I've viewed as more of a sharp.
Gotcha. Thanks for clarifying. All right, what else?
James White. We opened him 4.5 over minus 150 on receptions. That's all the way up to 6 under minus 130. So certainly a lot of bettors expecting Brady to complete a lot of his favorite plays, the check down throws. Mm-hmm. And I can't blame them there. That's about all we see Brady throw anymore is short passes. So that certainly makes sense right there.
Yeah, that fits what I think is the best prop on the board is the longest touchdown of the game, under 48.5 yards. That was my favorite. I've talked about it all day on Radio Row. Of course, it's going to be an opening kickoff, Devin Hester style, just to make me look stupid. But part of the reason is I think Brady's, you know, not going to throw these bombs anymore. He doesn't have the deep threat anymore. And then he also has his arm, right? Like he's going to be a lot of getting the ball out quickly to counteract Aaron Donald and then Ndamukong Suh. So you would think, you know, the underneath throws, James White over 4.5 makes a lot of sense as well.
Well, it does. And I can't say I disagree with you. I was on VSiN on Tuesday and Sammy Paniatovich gave that out as his favorite play in the game. That same prop you like.
Mm.
And it makes sense because I don't know that Brady, I mean, I think the only person that's afraid of a Brady deep ball right now is Bob Sutton, the Kansas City defensive coordinator who had all of his safeties playing 40 yards off the line of scrimmage for some reason. No, I agree with you. It probably will take some sort of a coverage breakdown for that bet to lose, unless there is, you mentioned it already, but a fluky type special teams or defensive touchdown, which there's really nothing you can do about that.
Right. And even like, I mean, a 47-yard touchdown is still like a bomb. And you still win. Like, it's not, like, I think the longest one's going to be like 33, right? I would honestly have taken under 39.5. So, good value there. What else?
I'll give you one that a lot of people are betting on, not necessarily wise guys, but we're taking a ton of money on Gronkowski over. We opened Gronkowski 49.5, we're all the way up to 56.5. But that's from mostly public bettors, so that's a pretty big move when it really isn't guys we consider sharp betting it, just everyone's betting it. Gronkowski, a very popular option so far. And Gronkowski is also one of the most popular options in the MVP pool. That doesn't surprise me at all, but he's been bet from 40-1 down to 30-1 to be the MVP.
Where are you guys on Brady?
Brady, we really were not getting that much money on Brady, which isn't a surprise. I mean, why would you take Brady to win the MVP at plus 105 when you could just bet the Patriots money line at like minus 130?
Like, well, yeah. I actually discussed that at OTL, hard-hitting journalism right there, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't understand why you would bet that, but Brady is not somebody we're seeing a lot of support on. Neither is Jared Goff. The guys that we're seeing, well, I'll tell you, the guy that's our biggest liability is Todd Gurley. We opened Todd Gurley at 16-1. He's down to 8-1, taking a lot of tickets and a lot of money on Gurley. And 16-1 is certainly good value if you think he's healthy. Todd Gurley would have never been listed that high if this was a healthy Todd Gurley, but we think there has to be something wrong with him right now.
And you guys built in a certain hold percentage, so regardless of who hits, you guys hold a certain percentage, right?
Oh, absolutely. And as we lower Gurley or we lower Gronkowski, we're raising up other people to keep the hold percentage fair. And right. It's hard for me to believe that it won't be one of the two quarterbacks. The only possibility that it's not Brady or Goff is if it's a very, very low-scoring game, like the Denver-Carolina game. And in that, if that were to happen, I think we would be very successful overall in the game.
So one other prop I've discussed in this index prop is Goff at 9-4 to win the MVP. I think if you can get the quarterback of the team that's power rated higher, right?
Yeah.
I think like 9-4 is pretty good value.
And there's very little support for Goff here, at least here at the Superbook. And last year, Nick Foles was in the position that Goff is in this season, and him winning the MVP was a huge win for us at the book.
And what odds did you guys have him then?
I want to say it was like 3-1 or 7-2. Yeah. I don't remember exactly. It was somewhere in that neighborhood. Now, the Eagles were a little bit bigger of an underdog than the
right.
Patriots were. I'm sorry, than the Rams are, excuse me. But
right.
It was somewhere in that neighborhood, like 3-1 range, and it was a very good result for us.
I mean, that's the thought process. Like, I wish I was ahead of the curve last year. I was like, well, if the Eagles win, Foles is probably going to win MVP. So that's the same concept here with the lower money line adjusting. But still, I think, remember, they opened as favorites. So you're getting over 2-1. I think there's decent. I mean, it's like, why even take the Rams on the money line? Just take Goff. Now, I think Aaron Donald and, like, those guys at Gurley, like you mentioned, see, there's more versatility there for, I think, the payout. Whereas I think Brady, why, you know, I don't know. But
we have a lot of there's a lot of tickets on Aaron Donald. I'll tell you that much. It's all small bets, a lot of $20, $25, $5 even bets on Aaron Donald to win the MVP. Certainly, if Aaron Donald wins the MVP, I think that means the game went very well for the books around the state.
What odds is it? 20-1 ish?
It's gotten as low as 20-1 right now. Aaron Donald's at 25-1.
Right, and then C.J. Anderson, you guys opened 30-1. I thought that was pretty high.
Yeah, and he's still at 30-1. And honestly, there's very little support for him so far. I mean, it's still pretty early. We're taping this on Thursday morning in Las Vegas. Most of the public that's going to be betting into these kind of pools isn't even in town yet. So I would still consider it early for the Super Bowl MVP pool. But, yeah, there's really very little support for Anderson right now.
What percentage of your handle is already bet?
It's a good question. We were debating that yesterday. I can tell you we've already taken about $1.65 million in prop bets as we're recording on Thursday morning. But I still think we're probably looking at over 80% of the money's coming in this weekend, at least 80%, probably maybe more like 90%.
So you're saying if it's you're saying 90, so you only have 10%
in? Not on prop bets. I'm talking about our overall handle for the Super Bowl. I think about 90% of it's going to come in this weekend.
So you're saying you'll do 15 million on the Super Bowl?
Well, the 1.65 million is only on props.
Oh, so you've got more. You've taken more.
Oh, yeah. That 1.65 million is just we've taken on props because
you guys might take 20 million.
That would be pretty high because we're only one shop. So I don't think.
Well, I was just doing the math. You said 90% is going to come in, so that means you've only done 10%. So I'm thinking 2 million, and then that's.
Yeah, well, 90% of the overall handle. That's the key thing to remember. I'm talking about the props. I'm not saying we're going to get 90% more on prop bets here in the next couple of days.
I see what you're saying.
I'm talking about 90% of the overall bets on the games. I'm talking the side, the first half, everything.
Gotcha. Interesting. Well. That's awesome. I could just love to see those computers light up. I was peeking a little bit when I was there during the AFC title game, and it's great to see all those numbers light up. So any other props of note?
Yeah, I'll give you one that we've seen a lot of sharp guys play, some guys that I really respect, but the number of kickoff returns in the game, they've been under 6 minus 120, which was our opening number. They've continued playing that one, and we're all the way down to 5.5 under minus 160. And that was one of the props that we had a lot of discussion about. I remember talking to Ed about it last Thursday before we turned on the betting, and he and I were going over it. And certainly a lot of really sharp players like the under. Kickoff returns is the key word there. It's not kickoffs. Kickoff returns.
Well, I saw Zuerlein prop for his first kickoff. Is it going to be a touchback? Yes, minus 300. So a lot of confidence in Greg the Leg. So you're saying if Zuerlein does a bunch of touchbacks.
Yeah,
and it's all about Guskowski.
What they're clearly betting on is that most of the kickoffs are going to be touchbacks, or maybe hopefully there won't be that many kickoffs because there won't be that much scoring. That'd be great for us. But these guys are thinking either there won't be many kickoffs, or they're all going to go for a touchback more likely.
That's fascinating. I should have stolen some of these for my Radio Row hits. Any others?
There's will the Patriots score a touchdown in the first quarter? That moved from plus 110 to now the yes is minus 130. So an expectation there that New England's going to get out early in this game.
Which is contrary to what's happened in previous Super Bowls, because that's been the talk a lot that people are trying to group. And you just can't. It's a different team, a different mindset. We saw them be aggressive against the Chargers, take the ball when they won the coin flip, and they've obviously jumped out to early leads in both their playoff games. So I can see that trend.
People love this one. Will there be a successful two-point conversion? We've already taken a lot of tickets on the yes on this one. In fact, I'm going to give you a ticket count because I know how much you guys love ticket counts. We've taken 99 bets on this one. Will there be a successful two-point conversion? Do you want to guess what the split is? Of the 99 tickets, how many are on yes, how many are on no?
What's the payout? Like, what are the odds we're looking at here?
It opened plus 230. Right now it's plus 210.
So you're looking at probably 88 to 11.
99 to nothing. There's 99 bets on the yes. I know you love those. The 99 on the yes, 0 on the no. And then how about this one? Will there be a two-point conversion attempt? That yes price is even money. No is minus 120. There's 141 tickets. You want to guess?
140.
139 on the yes. Two brave souls went with the no on that one.
So 139 to 2.
139 to 2. And then this one's always very lopsided. Will there be a defensive or special teams touchdown? Right now it's yes plus 190, no minus 240. There's 81 people that have bet it so far. I'll leave it up to you guys to guess the splits.
Kai, you going to weigh in there?
Kai, go ahead. 81 bets. What do you think? How many yes, how many no?
Oh, man. I mean, to keep up with the trend, what are we, 80 to 1?
81 to nothing.
81 to nothing. Wow.
So is that all public or any sharps on that?
Oh, no. These are the very public props. All these, like – will the Super Bowl go to overtime? That's always a very public prop bet. We've got 104 yes tickets, 5 no. These are the prop bets where the public loves to get involved. And these are the bets where if, you know, we can really get beat up, frankly, on these if they hit. And it's mostly smaller bets, but you're talking about props where we're taking 80 to 100 bets already, and the huge majority of these public prop bets are going to come in this weekend. So we're going to be stuck with pretty big liabilities on all these, and we always are.
But then the sharps come in at the last minute. They wait for you to have to move it and adjust to the public money. And then, like, literally, like, an hour before kickoff, won't they bet the other side on all of them?
I think that's their best bet. I think that they'll get a better price by doing that. That's right. Generally what happens, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the overtime. That's an old adage, right? Like, in this wacky industry.
And I think that, especially this year, when you have – you just had a Super Bowl go to overtime 2 years ago – you had both of the conference championship games go to overtime a couple weeks ago. So I'm expecting that overtime one to be even more popular this year than ever before.
One of the pro bettors I interviewed for the piece, Frank B, he's known as, said exactly that. He said, you guys are going to get hit hard on that because of the recency bias of seeing both conference title games go to OT.
There's no doubt. And I think not necessarily here, but I'm guessing that there will be good value on that one around town by Sunday, I think that there will be books that have a huge liability on that yes and probably move the price pretty aggressively. Let me give you one more ticket count one because I know those are fun. Will Gronkowski score a touchdown? Right now it's yes plus 170. The no is minus $2. There's 67 bets. Kai, do you want to redeem yourself here? 67 bets on Gronk touchdown.
Man, 67 to zero, man. Everybody's
right on the money, Kai.
There you go.
Kai, this guy's catching on, Doug. 67 to nothing. Not one person here at the Superbook has bet that Gronkowski will not score a touchdown on Sunday.
It's just the old conversation we have every year. People don't want to see things not happen. They don't want to risk a lot to win a little. And it's just magnified with the Super Bowl.
Boring is good for the Super Bowl. That's all I can tell you as a bookmaker. A boring game with not a lot happening is going to mean big returns for us here.
Are you positioning yourself at all to need a side or total or anything like that?
Not really. I mean, we're just kind of letting it happen. I can tell you guys right now, 79% of the money is on New England and 68% of the tickets is on New England. Everyone's asking us when we were going to go to three. The answer is we have no plans to do that because even the amount we lose right now on the Patriots, which is a big amount, it's less than what we win on the Patriots winning the Super Bowl in the Super Bowl futures pool. So if you asked what is our liability on New England right now, I would say we don't have a liability on New England. We win on New England. So
right.
You know, that's the advantage you have of going into the game in a great position in the future book. Ed Sammons did such a good job maneuvering the future pool this season where we have a nice win on New England. That safety net allows us to take all these New England bets without really panicking yet.
Was he texting from a cruise to move those numbers?
No. No cruises for Ed during NFL. Ed's Mr. NFL, Doug. He would never be he'd never be out of town during the NFL season.
You know, I told that story in my print article. I should have hammered home that, like, it wasn't like LeBron was traded. It was like random, like Larry Nance, Rodney Hood, and he's texting in from
Yeah, I remember it was right around the All-Star break, and Cleveland was really playing poorly, and they made a bunch of deadline deals, which ended up working for them, I guess, because they got back to the finals. But their very first game after they made all those trades, they played at Boston, and I think they routed the Celtics in that game. And we started taking all kinds of money on Cleveland to win the East. Now, you guys probably remember this, but we, and I'll include myself in this, none of us really thought Cleveland could win the East last year. We just thought the team was so bad. We didn't think that they could get past Toronto and Boston or Philadelphia, whoever the case may be. And LeBron certainly proved us wrong by somehow dragging that team all the way to the finals.
It is remarkable when you look back. It's going to be funny seeing when LeBron comes back to the Lakers what happens.
One peak of the NBA standings this year shows us that we were right about how terrible Cleveland is. Cleveland right now is 11-41 without LeBron. But apparently that was
enough. And without Kevin Love.
That's true. And Kevin Love. That's very true. But, man, still, that's pretty remarkable that team was in the finals just a few months ago.
Yeah, we did a preseason podcast with Brian Windhorst and Preston Johnson, a pro bettor in Vegas, you know. And one of the picks, I'm not even trying to like throw anyone under the bus because we all got some stuff right and some stuff wrong. But it was like Cavs, we were talking like want to make a run in the playoffs and like Dan Gilbert was going to like go all in and maybe even trade them. Like, it's like, this team stinks. So we like I can't believe in the beginning of the season we were talking about like that they were going to try to make the playoffs. I was like, really?
Well, this is the best thing for Cleveland. You know, not to go too far off topic, but this is the best thing for them is to be terrible and get a high draft pick and be terrible next year and get another high draft pick. That's, the, you know, they've got that championship from 2016 in the bank.
And, well, and they'll win the lottery because anytime they're in the lottery, they win it. So,
yeah, true. Very true.
All right, Bubba, anything else NFL related?
I mean, that's pretty much the long and short of it. I mean, we're seeing some sharp money come in on the Rams, like I said earlier in the show. I do think this number is going to come down a little bit. I think if you want to bet New England, you'll probably get a cheaper money line price somewhere in Vegas as we get closer to Sunday. I don't think you should bet Brady to win the MVP at plus 105. I think you should just bet the Patriots on the money line if you're so inclined. But I did play the Rams +3 for myself. But, I mean, anything can happen on Sunday. We've seen this over and over again in the NFL. It's such a hard league to predict. There's no outcome that would really surprise me on Sunday. I just think that +3 minus 110 is good value because I think at worst these two teams are even.
Yeah, I mean, I don't love the game. I said if I have to pick it, I'll take the Rams. Yeah. I'd probably take the – I think there was some sharp first half under action, no?
Yeah, there has been, actually. That's true. And we're down to 27.5 minus 120.
Really?
First half under here. You want to talk about bad beats. How about the first half under in the New England-Seattle Super Bowl? You remember that one?
I do not.
That was a – oh, I had that one. That was a spectacular bad beat, one of the many.
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course.
What happened?
Give the ball to Beast Mode, man.
No. The first half under. It was just, there was just a run of New England and Seattle trading scores there at the end of the first half. And I think Seattle scored a touchdown with seconds left to push it over.
I may never get over my AFC title game under.
Really? Never going to get over it?
Yeah. I don't know. Pretty large wager.
Oh, okay. Well. You just gotta in the NFL. All you can do is shake your head and just move on, man.
Yeah. All right, bud. That's great stuff as always. Really appreciate it, Mr. Director. And enjoy the Super Bowl. I imagine you'll be cruising the crowd, shaking a few hands.
Being
Mr. Director.
Gotta go out there, glad hand the high rollers, sign a few autographs, pose for some pictures. In other words, just another Sunday.
I got a funny story, and for all three of us. So I went to some event last night, like, you know, there's some media events and things like that, but it was at a club or something, whatever it was. And so I'm walking with Matthew Berry, friend of the show, friend of mine, and, you know, pretty established guy, right? And right before I see him, this fan goes, or this girl goes, Doug. And I turn around and she introduces the guy she's with. He's like, he's a huge fan and recognized. And he's like, man, I listen to the podcast all the time. You guys are great. And it was literally like my first 2 minutes there. And so I'm talking to him briefly. And then like, I see Matthew Berry and I'm like, he's next to me. I'm like, oh, that guy's like a huge fan of the podcast. And he goes, oh, you should have introduced me. I would have totally talked to him. I go, no, my podcast.
Of course.
He assumed it was the fantasy podcast.
Of course.
That's funny, man.
So we're spreading, Mr. Director. We're spreading.
Good, man. That's great. Yeah, I get a lot of very positive feedback. I got some very positive feedback on the one that we did last week, the one with Ed Sammons. Mm. And I traveled to San Antonio with some other bookmakers this weekend. And I was like, you know, I'm actually going to listen to this one on the plane. I told Jay Cornegay that, and then I got made fun of so much by those guys at the thought of me listening to my own podcast that I didn't do it. But I will listen to it at some point. But I heard the one last week was very good. I had several people tell me that, so that's good.
Couple things. It's like going over game film, by the way. That's all it is.
I do it
all the time.
And what else am I going to do on a 2.5-hour flight to San Antonio? I think we ended up just sitting there and talking. It's great.
So I want to ask you about San Antonio, but just to put a button on this, when we were at Thursday night, the unveiling of the props, there was a gentleman who had just flown in from Portland and talked about, raved about the podcast, even asked me for a picture. So I you were not around to maybe take a full team photo there, but it was positive vibes everywhere.
Just give Murray the photo. We'll crop him in.
Easy. There you go. Great. Yeah.
That's a great idea, Kai. That's great. That's good production there.
So what's going on in San Antonio with a bunch of bookmakers?
We were brought down there by the Alliance of American Football. That's a league founded by Charlie Ebersol and Bill Polian. And they had us in there this weekend or last weekend to watch a couple of the games and give them some feedback. And I'll say this, they've got some very interesting ideas. They've got some interesting rules changes. They don't even allow extra points. Everybody has to go for two. You guys can imagine how much I like that. So we had a good time. Went to a couple games there. We were in the Alamo Dome. We watched one of the games actually on the sideline. We watched Steve Spurrier's team, the Orlando Apollos. They won their game against Mike Martz's San Diego Fleet. So it was certainly pretty fun. And
interesting.
I gotta say, Christian Hackenberg looked pretty good. Hackenberg was in there. He was playing quarterback for the Memphis Express, Mike Singletary's team. And he was only in there, I think, for the first one or two sets of downs, but he looked pretty good. He made some pretty good throws. So we're going to have up Alliance of American Football odds here at the Superbook, and I'm even working on a future book today. I'm working on that right now. So we're going to get up future odds.
Hold on. So they're already playing these games?
These were rehearsal games that we went to. Okay. The first game is Saturday, February 9th. So they're starting their season after they get through, or after the NFL season ends, I should say.
This feels a lot like the UFL.
Yeah, we see these leagues pop up every now and then. I think the XFL starts next season, right? The second version of the XFL.
Yep, 2020.
So there's a lot of hunger for football betting in this country. If you guys hadn't figured that out.
Yeah, the UFL was great. I did the coaches show with Jim Fossil. A lot of good times on that with the former big name coaches. That's why I said it felt like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be fun, but there's a lot of back and forth on how to make a future book on this league. And we're going for it, man.
Good for you, man. That should be just a nice challenge in and of itself, just the craft of it all.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes, but yeah, it was a good time. We had a good time down there in San Antonio. Jay Cornegay, myself, and a few other bookmakers from around Nevada. But now it's back to the real world, man, the Super Bowl.
Party time in San Antonio, huh?
We had some fun. Yeah, we had a good time.
Good for you. Good for you. Yeah. All right, buddy, enjoy the game. You got a final prediction for us?
I'd say the Rams win this game. I think a close game. I'll say Rams 27-24. If you want my pick for this weekend, I'm going to the UFC. I'm taking Charles Oliveira Saturday night in the UFC. That's my real pick.
Oh, I like it.
Everybody wants me to make a pick on the Super Bowl. I did bet the Rams +3, like I said, so I guess I'll have to say the Rams.
I think the Rams in a teaser is probably the best play. You can get 8.5.
Yeah, but what are you going to tease it with?
Well, that's the problem. Maybe find an NBA game.
How about an open teaser to next football season? That'd be awesome.
Ooh, I like that. I like that. Well, maybe maybe one of your American Alliance games or whatever those are, or whatever it's called.
You know what was a good thing about being in San Antonio on Sunday? I wasn't subjected to the Pro Bowl. I didn't see any of that, and I feel fine.
I didn't either.
With that.
I'm fine, really proud. I did not watch a second of it. So
I didn't see it.
Big move on the under, right? You guys had a big move on the under.
That's what I heard. Yeah. But somebody wanted me to talk about it on a radio show I did on Tuesday, and I was like, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I didn't watch one play of that game. I saw the score. I heard what happened. I heard that Jason Witten broke the trophy, but I didn't
really.
I don't have much to. Yeah, I don't have much to add on the Pro Bowl.
All right, bud. Well, thanks. Enjoy the game. Appreciate all the insight today and the sharp plays, and we'll go from there.
All right, guys. Have a good weekend.
All right, thanks to Mr. Director. Coming up next, Michael Lombardi, who does a lot of work with VSIN, Vegas Stats and Information Network, former front office executive in the NFL, has great insight for us here on the Super Bowl. We're now pleased to welcome in former NFL executive Michael Lombardi, a guy I've been a big fan of, and you can listen to his work right now on Vegas Stats and Information Network. And also, he has a book out, The Gridiron Genius, and it's about building dynasties in the NFL. Michael, thanks for coming on, man.
I appreciate you having me, Doug. Thanks so much.
Tell us a little bit about the book, by the way, because there's a foreword by Bill Belichick who used to work with. So just a little bit of background there.
Well, you know, the book started out when I was working at the Raiders, and I knew the end was coming once we hired the Art Shell administration came in, and I thought, you know, there's no chance I'm going to be able to survive this. And I took a writing class in San Francisco, and, you know, I was at least aware enough to know that I had worked for two of the greatest Bills of all time, Walsh and Belichick. And so I thought this book, starting in 2007, was going to be a book about the two Bills. In fact, I tentatively named it the Bill of Rights, the Bills of Rights. And from that point on, you know, I just started working in the media, started collecting information. And when it came time to write, my publisher thought we needed to broaden the spectrum because I did work for Al Davis for 10 years, which is like working, you know, the little stripes they put on you in the Army for being overseas. 10 years with Al Davis is like 30 years in real life. So I needed to include him in the book as well. And so that's where the title is Gridiron Genius. It's not about me. It's about what I've learned.
Well, it's great stuff, man. And I'm looking forward to reading it. I've been a big fan of your work going back to when you had joined Bill Simmons on the podcast a bunch when it was the ESPN day. So I hope our listeners know your stuff because it's good content. And you've obviously shifted a little bit into the betting space with the VSIN, Vegas Stats and Information Network. How have you enjoyed that pure talk?
You know, I really, really enjoy it. I don't see it as shifting into the betting space as much as I see being able to deliver information. The one thing that I've always wanted to do was talk about the game and the information. So for me, with VSiN, I see it as being on MSNBC or CNBC or Bloomberg News talking about stocks. You know, I'm not telling anybody who to bet. I'm not suggesting what to do. I'm just giving you an analysis of the teams that I see and my breakdown of the games. And for me, that's always been the most fun. That's what I did for Belichick when I went back to New England with him. I was able to do that. I could break down the games in the right way and have that, you know, portray to him how it was going to go, winner or loser. So for me, this is just something I've always done my whole life. And VSiN gives me an unbelievable ability to do that and talk to the listener, the viewer, about the games that I love.
I agree. You articulated that very well. I joined our NBA show Sunday night on radio, and I talked about how it's just a metric. It's another set of analytics. It's another way to look at things. I always said that the College Football Playoff Committee should have an odds maker. They shouldn't be the only voice. They should be a voice. And I think it's another way to break down stuff. I ran into Warren Sharp yesterday at Radio Row in Atlanta, and this is a guy who does a lot of work for us at ESPN and ESPN Chalk. And, you know, he submits reports to teams and stuff like that. I mean, the analytics and the intelligence, and like you said, the commodities component to this is very similar to what the stock market is.
No doubt. And, you know, we know this. We had, the number one, the most influential person in sports, according to the Sports Business Journal, is the better. And we don't know what that person looked like. It could be 25 years old. It could be female, male. You know, we don't know the demographics of that person, but we know it spans a big, big globe. And to just ignore it, you know, to just not allow people. You know, the one chapter in my book, Chapter 9, I wrote about while I've got your attention, a lot of my pet peeves that happen on broadcast, you know, why we're not getting the game explained to us in a more dramatic fashion. For example, the NFL has missed an opportunity to talk about four-point plays. Four-point plays are plays in the red zone that are third downs that either they make the kick, either they get the third down, or they kick a field goal. That's a four-point play. That's no different than the three-point line in basketball. The teams are successful in four-point plays win. The Patriots are one of the best four-point teams in the league. The Rams, surprisingly, are not. But to me, the fan needs to know that not every third down is the same third down. So when the broadcast puts up their third down percentages, they're really not accurate because those percentages are in the field, they're backed up, and they're in the red zone. So all different parts of the field are completely different. And I think the fan needs to know more about the game. Now, TV people will say, well, nobody wants to get bored with the X's and O's. I agree completely. But we love chess. We love the strategy of the game. And you can broaden the strategy of the game to the fan by talking about some of these things.
I agree. I thought what Romo's done has taken it to another level, and I think we need more of that. I mean, look, this is a society that grew up on Madden and the advanced video games. I think the viewer is a lot smarter than people realize in discussing strategy. fourth down conversions is just one layer. I think there needs to be much more of this on second down, kind of work backwards. You know, I hate runs on second and 10. Like I just do. And I think there's other things that we can get more evolved and be more educated. And I think we're just scratching the surface with a guy like Romo in the broadcast booth.
Yeah, we really are. And I think the other factor, you hate runs on second and 10. And I call getting first downs in my book CFL offense. And it's funny, nobody wants to acknowledge it, but the two best teams in CFL offense are the Patriots and the Rams. They convert first downs and two downs. And when you can do that, you're really good. You know, the one line I can't stand about football, you hear it every Romo won't manage, won't talk about it as much, is when they talk about we got to be in third and manageable. Who wants to be in third down anyway? The Rams have only had 155 third downs all year. So they don't even want to be in third down. So I think we need to talk about the game differently, and it comes from understanding the complete game, not just the side of the football you played on.
That's a great point. And for those who don't know, CFL only has three downs, and that's why you have the appropriate nickname there. So let's talk about this game with the Rams and Patriots. How do you see it playing out?
Well, look, I think this game is unique from last year's Super Bowl. Last year's Super Bowl, I thought the Patriots would struggle because I truly believe the Eagles were the unconventional swordsman. Mark Twain had a great line. He said that the number one swordsman in the world doesn't fear the second best swordsman. He fears the unconventional swordsman. And the Eagles last year were unconventional. The Eagles last year were the seventh worst team in the NFL in being in third and seven or more of all the offenses. Now, that company was Cleveland, Cincinnati, Chicago, bad offense last year. You know, Buffalo, bad offense. They couldn't do it, and yet they converted third downs at an unbelievable pace. And they were able to do things and stretch the field horizontally and vertically. This year, the Rams are not unconventional. They're just very effective. If the Patriots think they're going to stop the run and win the game, that's wrong. If the Patriots think they're going to stop the play-action pass, they're wrong. This is a game about tempo and pace and about forcing the Rams out of their comfort zone and trying to really force them to throw more drop-back passes than play-action passes. And the way you do that is to get the lead. The Patriots are 49-7 in first-half point differential in the playoffs. Remarkable. They go into halftime with a 42-point lead in two games against two playoff teams, two really good playoff teams. So I think this game will be about starting fast for the Patriots, playing from ahead, forcing Wade to have to play defense unconventionally in the sense that when they're in two backs in the backfield, Wade's going to have to play his base. And how he reacts to the passing game out of base is going to be the key to the game. I think the Patriots can do some things to create some problems. I know the Rams can as well. I just think the Patriots are playing their best football at the right time of the year, something they've never done in any of their Super Bowl years before.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. I find it so fascinating with this Pats team because they've laid some serious eggs this year. I don't even know what happened on that Sunday night game with Detroit, but even some of their other games that they were bad losses too. And it's been, you know, they were underdogs in the AFC title game for the first time this season and just puzzling performances, but they've played so great. I wonder how much of the Pats looking great was just the bad Chiefs defense.
Well, I mean, that bad Chiefs defense shut down a really good Colt team. That bad Chiefs defense held the Colts, which were the number one team on third down conversions, to not converting a third down. And the Patriots offensively averaged 393 yards during the year. In the playoffs against the bad Chiefs team, as you quoted, and the Charger team, which we all felt, me included, might be the most complete team in the playoffs, they averaged 511 yards in those two games. So they're playing their best football. And I think the Chiefs don't understand complementary football. They never have with Andy Reid. They're always the guy who wants to run to the buffet line and eat instead of taking their time and enjoying it. When they had the ball with 3:32 to go in the game, down by three, they had ample opportunity, Doug, to manage the game differently and to only then give the Patriots the ball back with very little time and them having the lead. But instead, of course, the Chiefs, who don't play complementary football, who just rushed to score, scored with 2:02 to go in the game. The Patriots still had three timeouts, and they wonder why they lost in overtime. So I think you have to really break this Patriot team down. All the numbers, when you study this team, all the numbers are really remarkably close, and we don't think the Patriots had a good year. That's what's the fascinating thing about the Patriots. They're one Gronk tackle away from being the number one seed in the AFC. All they needed to do was tackle him one time, Kenyon Drake, and they're there. So I think we've underestimated how good this team is.
Yeah, maybe we're just spoiled by how high they set the bar in previous years. But to your point, they are playing their best ball, seemingly, and we're going to find that out on Sunday. You've talked famously, and I followed the line and probably not footnoted as much as I should have, but Belichick making a team play left-handed and forcing, taking away their goal. What do you think he's going to try to take away with this Rams offense?
Oh, I think it's going to be pretty clear what he tries to do. The first thing he's going to try to do is he's going to have to force Brandon Cooks to get away from press. He's going to jam Cooks at the line of scrimmage. And he's going to force him to have somebody in his face constantly. Then he's going to set the edge on both sides of his defense, because whether they run the ball, whether they run bootlegs or nakeds, the edge is where it all happens in the Rams. The Rams are very simplistic in what they do, but effective. They run five runs, four zone plays, outside, inside zone, both sides, and a scheme run against your front. So he's going to force the ball back inside to the middle of the field from the run game. And then what I think he's going to do more than ever is he's going to try to get into the paint. And the paint is an area I call from the front of the, if you look at a basketball court, the front of the rim is where the quarterback would line up, to the free throw line, which is where the quarterback sets up. That area between the rim and the free throw line is what I call the paint in football. That's where you win football games. That's where they beat the Chiefs. That's where you beat Jared Goff. You've got to get in the paint. It has nothing to do with sacks. It has everything to do with making him feel people around him and forcing him to throw the ball a tenth of a second too soon. So that's his version of making him play left-handed. Now, is he going to stop him completely? No, but I think that's going to be the key. The Rams are not a big third down team. They convert CFL style, so he's got to find a way to create negative plays. When you break down this Ram team and they're in third and tens, they don't convert them very well. In fact, the Jets convert third and 10 at a better pace than the Rams do, believe that or not. However, the Rams are rarely in third and 10. They don't have very many of those plays. You've got to find a way to create negative plays.
That's awesome breakdown. What about the Rams? How are they going to slow down Brady and this offense? Because, like you said, that 49-7 point differential in the first half of the two playoff games. What's Wade Phillips going to do?
Well, Wade's going to do what he always does. Wade plays an under front, which is what he typically plays all the time. And he has played cover one, which is man-to-man, or cover three. Now, since about the middle of the season, he's decided to abandon cover one. As much as we talk about Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib being unbelievable, you know, we go full Dick Vitale on how great they are at cover corners, they don't play man-to-man. They play zone. They play cover three. And they're 98% cover three. Now, they match the coverage once the pass pattern comes. I think this will be a big day for Gronk. I think Gronk will be able to come back a little bit to the Gronk of old, because there'll be seams that he can catch the ball in. If you go back and watch the Bear game, Trubisky had some horrible throws, but guys were wide open in that game. They could have really blew him out. So what I think Wade's got to do is decide what his poison wants to be. If he plays nickel against two backs in the backfield, he's telling the Patriots, you try to run the ball, I think I can hold up. If he plays base, he's got to hope he can hold up in the passing game. So I think what Wade needs to do is get into Brady's paint. Same thing. He's got to force Brady to not be able to step up into the pocket. He's got to put pressure on him, and he's got to clamp down quick in the route. You can still play zone and clamp down early in the route. However, that being said, I think that's what he's got to do, and he's got to be able to handle the multitude of formations and personnel groups that Josh McDaniels will put on the field and then spread you out to create some mismatches. And he's going to have to play the chess game with them. I think it's going to be a challenge, but the key to this game is if the Rams win, Aaron Donald will be the MVP of the game.
Really? You think he's the key? Because, I mean, that's what everyone says, is getting Brady off his spot. Now, that's the recipe for every quarterback, but that's the key, the paint area for this one.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think when you can do that, I think then it becomes a whole different ball game. And, you know, Brady doesn't feel comfortable stepping up. But this idea that you're going to be able to match and shut down on the outside, look, Wade knows more than Bob Sutton. The key to Tom Brady is to pack the middle of the field. That's why he'll play zone with two people in the middle. He'll really pack the middle of the field, force Brady to throw the ball outside. If he does that effectively and they don't have outside throws and Brady can't make them, then they're in trouble. But typically the Patriots are smart and savvy enough to figure out how to get those throws on the outside. And they'll win those matchups. They'll double move Marcus Peters. They'll find ways to attack outside to force Wade to have to defend the width of the field. when you want to play Brady the best, Rob Ryan, Rex Ryan, those guys, they understand. You pack the middle of the field, have an extra defender. The problem is when you play zone a lot, they'll run a defender through and it'll clear a zone for the next guy coming through. You can just ask Pete Carroll. That's what happened. Every time the Patriots played Seattle, you can go back and look at the numbers. They're going to average between 450 and 500 yards passing or moving the football because they understand how to attack that style of match zone.
It's fascinating. Who do you have in the game?
I like the Patriots 28-24, Doug. I think it's going to be a great game. I think the other area we didn't talk about that the advantage typically favors the Rams is special teams. I don't see it here. Belichick's too savory. He understands how to handle fake punts. I think he'll have his own way to handle Johnny Hector. He's thrown the ball four times. He's run it once this season. I think he'll know how to handle it. With Hector and the personal protector on the field, you've got to be fully aware. I don't anticipate the Patriots ever taking their defense off the field. I think they'll match. I think they'll jam those gunners constantly. Because remember, there's no pass interference on a pass play. So you can just beat the hell out of them and get them on the ground. And I think that's what they'll do. So I don't give the advantage to the Rams there. I just think over time the Patriots will have too many ways to attack the Rams, and I think eventually they'll win. I've never seen the Patriots, and you can speak to this as well, as loose and as comfortable during a Super Bowl run as they are right now. They're playing their best football. I don't want to go away from it.
Yeah, they've got that underdog label, whether it's fair or not. They've certainly embraced it. One question about the Rams' defense. Is their run D as bad as people want to make it out to be?
Well, here's the problem is when we talk run D, this is another part of the game that no one discusses, is what is their run defense? Is it against 11 personnel, one back, one tight end? Is it against base personnel 21, which is what the Patriots like to run? So typically earlier in the year, they were not very good when they were playing nickel runs against 11. They got run out of it. They got spread. They've played some more zone to add an extra defender down into the box to help them with their gap control. So in the playoffs, they really have played much better. They're 50 yards better defensively as a playoff team than they were during the regular season. I think nickel runs is their Achilles heel, but I think it's two back nickel runs that you can create some problems. So that's always the key to football is not how are they running the ball, but what personnel groups do they run it from and where are they effective? And I think that's where the Patriots create some problems. I think they're going to test the Rams in that area, but the Rams have played much better run defense against 11 personnel in the playoffs. Can they do it against 21? I'm not sure.
What's your level of confidence in Jared Goff?
When Jared Goff has a clean, you know, I was not a huge Jared Goff fan coming out. In fact, I was on Rich Eisen, and I just didn't think the guy played fast enough before Sean McVay got there. And I still don't think he plays fast enough. And I'm not trying to say I was right because that's not that. I'd rather be, as Al Davis would say, I'd rather be consistent than be correct. And so I'd rather be correct than be consistent, excuse me. So I think when you rush him and you make him play fast, he's not as effective. You look at him in December and January, his average yards per attempt is below 7. People get a handle on what he's doing, and they get into his face. McVay does a great job of masking what he's not very good at doing and playing to the positives. That's called coaching. And so I don't have a lot of faith in Goff if the Patriots can get into the paint. If they can't and he's got time to check the runners at first and third before he throws the ball to the plate, then I think he could be effective. No one throws the ball to more wide-open receivers in the NFL than Jared Goff. Almost, I think, you and I could play quarterback at times for the Rams, the way he's able to have time in the pocket and deliver strikes. But that's going to be the key to the game, is can the Patriots make him play faster?
It's fascinating stuff. I'm just the whole matchup is great. It was the coaching matchup, the player matchup. I mean, on paper, right? The Rams are theoretically better.
Yeah, I think if you know Mitch Moss on VSiN said if this game was played in the regular season, you know the Patriots would probably be a 3-point dog. I kind of agree with that, but I think there's an element of this that the pressure, the big game. I think it's all really difficult. And look, let's face it. I think the Rams are a good team, and nobody has to prop them up. They deserve to be here, but let's face it. If we would have had a helmet-to-helmet call, if this would have been the Canadian Football League or if this would have been the NC2A, the Rams wouldn't be representing the NFC. We know the
right.
Saints would be, and that Saint team would be a much tougher matchup for New England because of the balance and their ability to spread you out with Kamara. I think the key in this game for the Rams also is Todd Gurley. Gurley's had 59 catches during the season for the Rams, averaged just slightly under 10 yards a catch. and he's a huge factor in the passing game. Last year, he was the second leading receiver on the team. He averaged almost 12 yards a catch. To me, if he's healthy and can catch the ball in the backfield, that's the one area the Patriots linebackers will be in a huge liability, and they won't be able to cover him.
I hope he is healthy, because this is a guy that was in the MVP conversation for a majority of the season, and he's such a weapon. It's really been strange. I mean, he had a good game against Dallas, buck 15 on the ground, but only four carries in the NFC title game. So it's really the giant unknown, really, is Gurley's health.
Yeah, look, Gurley coming out of college, he had a degenerate knee problem. Many teams were worried about his second contract. The Rams shocked everybody and paid him, and he's well-deserved to be paid. He's a tremendous player. But his knee problems are going to be there for most of his career, because his knee is not exactly a young man's knee. There's some issues. It's a Terrell Davis type of situation. Now, whether he can keep working his way through it, I hope he can. But I think sometimes it comes up, and maybe he just doesn't feel himself. I think with the 2 weeks off, he will.
Yeah, I think I had heard that C.J. Anderson was just like a better fit for a zone run. Is that right? That's why they were using him?
It's hard for me to say that, because I think Gurley's the straw that stirs the drink. There was a time before C.J. showed up, if the Rams didn't give him the ball 17 times on the ground, their chances of winning weren't as good. They're undefeated when he runs the ball 17 times or more. That's a fact with Sean McVay. That number hasn't changed. Now, I still think they're an effective team. I still think they can do so many things. But when C.J. Anderson's in the game, Belichick is saying to himself, this is going to be a bootleg. This is going to be some form of play action, but it isn't going to be the ball. I don't have to worry about my matchup on who's guarding C.J. Anderson. We can cover him. When Gurley's in the game, he's worried about the whole sheet that McVay has in front of him.
Gotcha. Michael, thank you so much. This was so insightful, and obviously, you know, just stuff that we can never get anywhere else. So really appreciate it, man.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate it.
So thanks to Michael Lombardi. Always incredible insight, and obviously a busy guy this week, so thanks to him. Next up is Bill Barnwell. And Kai, we had some technical issues, so we got a little bit of an echo. Is that what you're saying that you heard on this recorded interview?
Yeah, you know, for everybody listening, DK is a busy man in Atlanta moving around, so wherever he was, there was a little echo, but it's a great listen. So,
I'm in my hotel room moving around. Yeah. All right, so a little bit of an echo on my part. I apologize to those, but Bill's sound quality is great, and as is his insight.
Let's now welcome in our second ESPN senior writer of the week to discuss the Super Bowl. You know him from all of his NFL coverage, Bill Barnwell, here on the podcast. Bill, how are you, man?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. Now, we're both in Atlanta, but we are on our trusty apps. We're not in person together. that happens. But look, man, obviously it's a big time of year. You just wrote an extensive piece for ESPN.com about, like, gosh, here we are over the years, Patriots and Rams yet again, much different situation than when they met in the 2002 Super Bowl. But I just wanted to kind of get your insight, because I know you have such depth on your writing and coverage, and I think it really fits in the gambling space when there's like a Super Bowl like this and props forever. So I just think it really works well.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm excited.
How do you see this playing out? I mean, let's just talk about your article and everything else you've touched on.
Yeah, I mean, I think about this game on the whole. You know, obviously each side has 2 weeks to prepare, and if anyone, you would figure, gets an advantage with 2 weeks to prepare, it's Bill Belichick. At the same time, though, you look back at these eight playoff games they've played, and we covered this at ESPN, Kevin Seifert wrote an article. I mean, the eight previous Super Bowl games they've played, they've all been close. Every single game has had either a lead change in the fourth quarter, or it's been tied at some point in the fourth quarter. So, you know, I have no reason to think that's not going to be the case with the 2.5-point spread here. We're going to see basically two teams who I think are very flexible in some ways, and more flexible than I think people give them credit for. And it might come down to what we see early in this football game and how teams adapt to that once we see whether the Rams, for example, whether they can come out in their 11 personnel with Todd Gurley, which they did for pretty much the entire year, and execute against the Patriots. If they can do that, well, then they're going to stick with that for the majority of the game, and the Patriots are going to have to adjust on the defensive side of the ball. But the flip side, of course, if the Patriots can take away the outside zone, take away the play action, force Jared Goff to throw the football, well, then suddenly now I think the Rams are going to have to adjust. They might go to 12 personnel, which they did against the Saints and had a lot of success doing that. Go with more of a run approach, take the game out of Jared Goff's hands, and try to get back in the game that way. So I think we're going to see you know, kind of the first quarter, maybe first 20 minutes of this game really sort of dictate how comfortable the Rams are in terms of how they want to employ their offense. And that's going to really sort of make a lot of the game flow from that for me.
What do you make of the Patriots' strong starts this postseason and even accepting the kickoff in the opener for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think they are a team that's playing at a high level. Like, I think that a lot of the criticism of the Patriots might have been overstated. I mean, you know, their one laterals play away from going 12-4 and looking really great 11-5 is not exactly anything to be ashamed of. And we're seeing a team that I think is really good at running the football, which I don't think a lot of people gave them credit for earlier in the season. So this is a team that I think isn't perhaps as dependent upon Tom Brady, maybe as they were a few years ago. And the defense, much better than it was a year ago, even though the raw numbers basically say they're the same. They were fifth in points allowed last year, seventh this year. DVOA, the advanced stat at Football Outsiders, presents a totally different picture of the situation. 31st in DVOA last year, heading into that game against Nick Foles, 19th. In DVOA, it's not a great defense necessarily, but a much sounder defense. I think people are giving them credit for, and they're healthy. So I think we're seeing a lot of players who, you know, are playing at a high level just because they're in the flow of playing football for 16 games. Excuse me.
We had Mike Lombardi on the podcast, and he said if the Rams win, Aaron Donald's going to be MVP because mm-hmm. that's really their best chance and really the only way, at least to just disrupt the backfield. You wrote about it, Donald, in your piece, called him a future Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. Just your thoughts on the Patriots, because it's funny, like we use that narrative, oh, the way to stop the Patriots is to get sure. Brady off his spot. Well, that's every quarterback. So,
right.
You know, how will they counteract Donald?
Yeah, I mean, you look at history with Brady. Of course, we think about that those two Giants games where they did get a ton of pressure on him, especially up the middle with Justin Tuck, you know, moving into the interior in 08. This is a, you know, you're not going to stop Aaron Donald. That's just not going to happen. You're not going to have a Super Bowl where you're going to say, where did Aaron Donald go for the entire game? That's impossible. What you can do, though, I think is sort of do things to limit his effectiveness on the game. Double team him, of course, is a simple way to do it. You trap him, so you don't worry about, or you don't maybe put an emphasis on, you know, trying to stop him, let him come into the backfield and then hit him with Gronk or hit him with a guard and hope that you can get there quick enough so it doesn't blow up your play and then run into the, you know, the gap where you, end up going and sort of let him, you know, be aggressive. Let him try and cheat a little bit to try and get into the backfield and then go where he is not. I think there's a lot of ways you can do it. And you look at history for the Patriots, going back through even 2001, Tom Brady does not really have many games where he gets beat up by one player for a big chunk of action. I think, yeah, I went through the numbers and there's three players or three instances in the 18 year history of Tom Brady where he's been sacked more than twice by one player in a game. It was Joey Porter, you know, a decade plus ago at this point for the Dolphins. It was Von Miller in that 2015 AFC Championship game loss where Von Miller was phenomenal. The whole Broncos pass rush was phenomenal. And it was Grady Jarrett, actually in the Super Bowl a couple years ago, had three sacks and kind of out of nowhere really sort of launched his career. So, you know, I think Aaron Donald's going to have a play where he looks phenomenal or a couple plays where he looks phenomenal. But as talented as he is and as impactful as he is, I don't think there's much of a history with the Patriots where you're going to sit here and say, oh, well, you know, he is likely to have a three sack game or likely to have a seven hit game. It's just, you know, Brady's too smart. I think Belichick's too smart and the offense is too smart to let that happen.
Yeah, I know. It's just going to be fascinating, the chess match of these teams, because I always laugh about this Chiefs defense and what they were Sutton was doing with the safeties when Brady couldn't throw deep, especially in that weather. And they were just running rub routes. Like, Wade Phillips is not going to be that awful in terms of, like, scheming. And it's going to be really interesting to see the adjustments throughout the game.
Yeah, I think absolutely. It's going to be a lot of back and forth. And I really see that especially on the offensive side of the ball for the Rams, because you think about Jared Goff, think about what he does best, and what Sean McVay does best is that they work that clock until 15 seconds when the communication cuts off. And Sean McVay is sitting there saying, hey, Jared Goff, this is what I see on the sidelines. This is where you should be going with the football. We should be changing the play to this. You should be killing this play or, you know, changing this route. This is what you should be looking for. This is where the mic is. This is where the protection is. And of course he gets help from the offensive line. John Sullivan does a good job at center as well. But you know, you get the idea is that he's getting a lot of help from the people around him and especially from McVay on the sidelines. So if you're the Patriots, I think you have to figure out how you can hide your defense and sort of hide your intentions about what you're going to do after the snap from not only Jared Goff, but also Sean McVay, which it's a lot tougher to hide it from McVay than it is from Jared Goff. So I think, that's going to be a really fascinating chess match because I don't want to reveal too quickly, but at the same time, you know, the Rams run those jet sweeps. They get the ball going, getting out very quickly. And so you might not be, but in the process of trying to be sort of vanilla and trying to hide, trying to hide what you're doing on defense, you don't want to get caught by a quick play or a quick pass. So, it's going to be a really fascinating thing even before the play begins. And you're going to see, I think, a lot of adjustments back and forth during the game when it comes to, how the Patriots are going to handle what they want to show and what they don't want to show to McVay.
Who do you have in the game?
I have the Patriots. I feel not incredibly confident. I have the Patriots by 4, so, I have them covering, but not by a significant margin. I don't think any result would really shock me, though. I guess the Patriots getting blown out would really surprise me. Yeah, I think I'd say the Patriots getting blown out would surprise me. A big Patriots win, you could see the game being put on Goff and Goff just having a disaster of a game and throwing 3 or 4 interceptions, not out of the question. Can't really see that with Brady. Could see a game where Donald dominates and Goff plays well and the Rams, doing by a couple touchdowns, but I figure the Patriots would have enough, in them to kind of catch up in the second half if necessary. I'm inclined to lean under. I think I have 27-23 is my final score, so under the total. I could see a slow-paced game, see a lot of running from these two teams, so my inclination is probably Patriots and under, but a little more confident maybe in the under than in the Patriots side of things.
Yeah, I like under two. I've heard some talking to people out here that I really respect. They kind of like think it's going to be the scoring will really pick up once the adjustments are made.
Maybe. I mean, not hardly out of the question that it could be like like the Patriots Chiefs game where it was, 13-0 at halftime. And then they scored, ended up being a 60 plus point game. So, I mean, it could happen that way, certainly. And I think, I think these two teams, they're not super turnover friendly. Patriots have turned the ball over more frequently than they have in years past. I think it's fair to say, but, I don't think you can really count on Tom Brady and the Patriots to, fumble a couple times or throw 2 interceptions. And I don't know if the Patriots have the pass rush to really strip Zach Goff a ton. So, yeah, I'm inclined to say it's kind of a slow game, not a ton of possessions for each team. So I would lean under. But then, Rams are the worst team in the league by QBR on deep passes. So, Brady could hit a couple of big passes. It could be it could get up 14-0 quickly, and then suddenly it becomes a shootout. So, I lean under, but I'm not like, I wouldn't say it's like a lock for me by any means.
You said in a recent piece last week, you would not recommend gambling on the Super Bowl to anyone I care about. Come on! What's up with that?
Okay, so, a few years ago when I was at Grantland, I was living in Las Vegas and was writing about the prop bets. I noticed, hey, you look at the bet on there not being a safety. The odds are in your favor. I mean, obviously it's a bet that people, you go to Vegas, you put $20 in there being a safety, the odds are not in your favor. The odds are, pretty high. So you hit on a 9-1 bet for there not being a safety, or for there being a safety, you're going to feel pretty great, but books are there for a reason. The books know, hey, we want to balance out that action. They give you a little bit of an edge when it comes to they're not being a safety. I don't remember what the exact odds were, but, kind of in like you're betting, the implied odds with your betting it are 92 or 93, and the actual odds are closer to 95% that there's not going to be a safety. So you're getting a little bit of a margin. You're not going to get rich off it, but so I decided to, play that and write about it for Grantland. And I bet on there not being a safety. And I don't know, I think a few $100, I didn't lose a house or anything, but it was not an insignificant amount of money to me. I was not thrilled about it. And it was the, Patriots Giants game in Indianapolis. And I was in the press box covering it. And first drop back of the game for Tom Brady, he commits intentional grounding in the end zone for a safety. And then the next year, I was in Vegas, and I was covering the Ravens Niners game, and I was in Vegas for the game itself. And well, I said, happened last year. It's the old gambler's fallacy adage about you can't be in 2 plane crashes back to back on 2 different flights. But I said, right. Hey, the odds are still in my favor, realistically, even if they're independent events, which they obviously are. Odds are in my favor again still. You're going to have more people betting on the safety happening again because it happened a year ago. So you'd figure a little bit contrarian to go towards the no again. And this time I made it through the entire game until the final play, final meaningful play when the Ravens just held in the end zone and deliberately committed a safety on a punt by Sam Cook, who ran out of bounds. So that was not great. I was in the sports book. I think literally everybody in the room who had placed action on the game was cheering uproariously, except for the book and for me. Would not recommend betting on there not being a safety, even if the odds are in your favor.
Well, and that's the old thing we talk about with this prop bets, especially in the Super Bowl. If people go to Vegas, want to see things happen, they want to see big payouts, risk a little, win a lot. And that's right. Why the price is driven down below true mathematical odds. But there are prop bets that I think are advantageous. And I think given someone like yourself who's researched so much, there are things that jumped out. If you don't have any, then I will shoot some at you. But have you caught any prop bets for this particular game that say, yeah, I kind of like one of those sides?
I have a few I like, actually.
Good.
I usually I kind of sit there and I'm like, eh, like I don't feel that strongly about it. But I have a few I actually really like for this year. I have one kind of in this vein, kind of contrarian, have to bet a bunch to win. But I feel like I'm pretty confident about it. It's Johnny Hecker not attempting a pass at minus 550.
I agree with you.
It's such like a, he did it last week. Everyone who goes there is going to be like, oh, I just saw him do it. You know, like the Patriots, you got to do something kind of tricky to beat the Patriots. You're going to see it happen. The Patriots know that. The Patriots are one of the best coached teams in football. You don't think every single punt play they're going to be, you know, looking at Johnny Hecker until that ball hits his foot. I would feel so confident that they're not going to put him in a situation where they're comfortable letting him throw the ball.
Yeah, I mean, like, you're not sneaking up on Belichick. Lombardi said he thinks he's going to, Belichick's going to keep his defense out there, like, every time.
I wouldn't doubt it. And I who would fault him? Who would sit here and be like, oh, you shouldn't do that? Like, the Patriots are not going to win this game, you would figure, based on a punt return. They're going to win it by, you know, playing defense and not letting any sort of mistakes happen, like, for example, allowing the Rams to convert a fake punt for a first down.
Right. And actually, it's funny that every Super Bowl, there's the over-under on number of people to attempt to pass. And it's 2.5, and usually the under is heavily juiced. This year it's a pick.
Yeah, this year, I mean, I would bet
under because I don't think it's going to blow out. You're not going to get garbage time. And I like the under because Edelman, I don't think Hecker's going to throw, and Edelman's the other variable. And it's funny. I think Jeff Sherman, one of the odds makers at the Westgate, wanted to open it like under, like over minus 160.
Oh, my God.
because of Hecker and all. Well, because trick plays. But I also brought up, now keep in mind, trick plays don't count when there's a 2-point conversion. So like the Philly special was a touchdown, but it could have easily been a 2-point conversion.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I had it on my list here, under 2.5 players. I think it makes total sense. I think Edelman is the player who would do it, obviously, if you're going to see a pass in this game from someone who's not Tom Brady or Jared Goff. I just think Hecker, yeah, I just think the odds are like unlikely that they're going to be comfortable letting him pull that off. So otherwise, the other guy I think comes to mind for me, James White, who I think such an underrated player, has played a big role in so many Super Bowls. I actually like him as a runner in this game, over 3.5 rushing attempts, minus 130 at the Westgate based on the prop bets they posted from what I can see. I just think he is someone who the Patriots are going to be comfortable using him as their base running back in a lot of cases. I think they're going to have James Devlin on the field a bunch in this game. I think they're going to dare the Rams to either match up to them when it comes to covering Julian Edelman in the slot with their base offense, daring the Rams to bring out their base defense and cover Edelman with LaMarcus Joyner or move Marcus Peters or Aqib Talib into the slot. I think that'll happen. I don't think it's going to go well for the Rams. I think their adjustment's going to be, hey, let's try and stop the Patriots in nickel with that same package. Let's try and bring Nickel Robey-Coleman onto the field and try and stop the Patriots with Edelman, with Devlin on the field, with our nickel package. And then you're going to see the Patriots transition, bring Devlin back into the backfield, and then have them run the football. And James White is someone who, of course, we know can do both those things. He can run as an effective runner. He can also catch passes out of the backfield. So I think he's going to see a lot of snaps in this game, and I think over 3.5 attempts seems pretty good to me. I would have guessed, if you'd asked me to pick that number off the top of my head, I would have guessed 5.5, to be honest with you. So I think 3.5 is a pretty nice little spot there.
But it is Bill Belichick, and especially in the Super Bowl, you just can't rely on him for anything in this regard, especially with running backs.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I would look back at his history. I mean, the guy they turn to when they need to play, the guy they turn to if they're down in the Super Bowl, to be honest with you, has been James White. So even though I don't think they're going to be down necessarily, I guess I would say this, like if they're down, White will be on the field to catch passes and he'll get some runs just in the context of how the Rams line up. And I think if they're winning, I could see White on the field, you know, mixing it with Michelle and Burkhead and then running the ball a fair amount. So, I think in both scenarios, I could see White having a meaningful role in the offense. So you never know for sure, of course, but I just think history says Belichick likes to go to White, in big games like this, like in the Super Bowl.
Any other props? Because I have some others to send your way.
Oh, okay. I have Will Gronk score a touchdown? Yes, plus 170. That's just a general, like, I know he hasn't scored a bunch this year. They did try to throw him a touchdown pass. He was open. Brady did not see Reggie Ragland kind of getting in the throwing lane after he kind of released the pass almost. But they went to Gronk in the red zone last week on the 1 yard line. Would have been a touchdown with a better throw. I think getting plus 170 on Gronk to score a touchdown in any game, at any point in his life, I think is a victory. So I just think the odds are a little too high there. I would go, you know, I would have guessed maybe 125, 130, and I think that would have even been generous. I wouldn't have been shocked if they posted it at even money. Gronk's just, I mean, he's such a force of nature. So to me, even though I think he's not maybe the guy he used to be, I think I'd go plus 170 pretty comfortably there.
You mentioned James Devlin a moment ago. I like him over 3.5 combined rushing and receiving yards.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. 100%. I think he's going to play a very meaningful role in this game. I think he's going to get 35, 40 snaps in this game. Assuming the Patriots, you know, get to about 75, 80 snaps, which is, I think, a pretty fair, maybe a little less. Maybe, I think he's going to get about half the snaps, put it that way, I'll say. Only other one that comes to mind for me, and then I'll happy to hear what you think as well. I like Brandon Cooks under 75.5 receiving yards. Think about what the Patriots did to Tyreek Hill last week. Doubled him pretty much all the time. Help over the top for their young cornerbacks, Jonathan Jones and Keon Crossan. Keon Crossan was on the fastest player on the field in Tyreek Hill. Could see a similar sort of defense on Brandon Cooks this week. Again, not the same exact player, but the same sort of player plays a similar sort of role in the Rams offense. And I think Stephon Gilmore is tailor-made for sort of single-handedly taking on Robert Woods one-on-one, sort of the obvious matchup for them if we look at the Patriots defense for me. So they were able to slow down Hill last week. Of course, he did have one big catch, but otherwise a pretty quiet day. I think they'll do the same thing to Cooks in this game when it comes to receiving yards.
Yeah, Lombardi thinks they're going to jam him hard.
Yep.
And make him beat him kind of over the top, but with mm-hmm. safety help or whatever.
Yeah, I believe it. I'm intrigued to hear what you think, though. I want to hear what you think about the problem.
So my two favorite, actually, four, to be honest. The Devlin over 3.5 rushing receiving yards is one. My other is the longest touchdown of the game under 48.5 yards.
Really?
It's a lot to get a 50-yard touchdown.
That's true.
I think the Patriots are going to attack the Rams because of Donald and Sue, like underneath short throws, quick drops. And then I think everything's going to be like kind of underneath. And then with the Rams, like the Patriots have that bend but don't break defense, and their secondary is very underrated. I just don't see, I mean, they do those deep crossing routes, but I just don't, if they beat me, that they beat me, but I don't see a special teams and I just don't see it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's more likely, if anything, if it comes to a long touch, I think you're going to see like a screen that gets busted or a drag route where Edelman turns up field and there's one guy there and he makes the guy miss and goes for 50 yards. I think that's more likely to me than, a bomb over the top. I just don't think the Rams have been pretty bad against those deep passes. The Patriots are actually really good against deep passes by QBR. And to me, I think if it were reversed, if it were the Patriots really struggled against deep passes, I could see the Rams, hitting a shot here or there. But, to me, it just doesn't seem like it's the most likely path. I just don't think that it's unless the Patriots, they want to play cover zero, which is not out of the question. To me, I would feel – I'm not as confident maybe as you are, but I do feel like I would take the under if I had to pick one of the sides on that bet.
Gotcha. So those are my two favorite. And then my next two that I think are like – well, one's good value. I think Goff at 9-4 to win MVP is pretty good. A team that opened as the favorite, right? A team that's higher power rated, you're getting 9-4 on the quarterback, which typically always wins MVP.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for sure. Like, I think anything on the quarterback that's, significantly different from even money, I think is a pretty good opportunity. Is there a long shot in that list you think you'd like for MVP if you weren't going to take Goff?
Well, I talked to an oddsmaker earlier in the podcast, and he said they took some sharp money on Gronk. I think it was sharp, or it was public money, from 40-1 to 30-1.
Wow. Yeah.
But I thought, I think Aaron Donald at 20-25-1 is a good, decent bet. And I also think C.J. Anderson at something like 20-1.
Yeah, I think I saw 20-1. I could buy it. I mean, I think it's going to be the goal line back for this game at the very least. So you'd figure, maybe he gets two short touchdowns. Maybe he has a long run late to break something up. Yeah, it wouldn't be implausible to me either. I tend to hate these bets. I feel like they never come through. But I do kind of like Stephon Gilmore at 100-1 because I think he's going to get targeted a bunch in this game if they single – him on Woods. I think they're going to try and go at him because I don't think they're going to be comfortable going to Cooks with double coverage. I don't think Reynolds is going to be a meaningful part of the offense. And again, I could be wrong. Who knows? But, you know, wouldn't shock me if Gilmore had a two-pick game in this game of the guys. And I don't know. I mean, I think there's a really interesting opportunity here. I think that Goff, you know, I think it's more likely Goff has a really bad game than a really great game. And to me, if he has a really bad game, suddenly the defense comes into play as sort of a possibility.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, you say you really don't like these plays because there's very little value usually. It's called one-way betting. I mean, a point spread has two-way betting. This is one-way betting. You can't bet even money on Brady not to win MVP, right? It's just even money. So there's never a great value, although the long shots are the key for any of this stuff. And you can take – I mean, Gurley's been bet down from 16-1 to 8-1.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for all we know, he could be healthy and he's going to be split wide and used in the passing game.
Yep. I thought Gurley over 3.5 receptions was pretty solid. I think he's going to play a meaningful role in the passing game. And I think if I'm right about the game script and the Patriots are ahead, you'd figure you're going to see a lot of Gurley, and especially on checkdowns and screens, as a way to move the football.
Yeah, I like that, actually, now that you mentioned 3.5. I'm going to root for my fellow Brown grad, James Devlin, hard on the 3.5 rushing and receiving yards. And but no, you raised some good points. I don't know if I would lay the 550 on Hecker, although it's certainly tempting. Mm-hmm. I could see them. Gosh, that is good value, isn't it?
I mean, if it were like if you asked me what it should be, I would have guessed like 750, 800. But yeah. I think they're gonna get so much action on him throwing a pass just because, you know, you saw it last week. You don't have to imagine it. You could literally just say, oh, it happened. But I can't imagine Belichick. I can't imagine being a player on the Patriots and walking to the side, a Patriots player thinking about walking to the sidelines and getting chewed out by Belichick for letting Johnny Hecker throw a pass.
Right, right. They probably spent a full day on it.
Right. I just can't. Like, even if they're down, I would figure they're going to run a fake with, it's going to be some kind of trick play and it'll be someone else throwing the football or Hecker running the football. Like, if it were a completion, I'd feel even stronger about it, but I can't imagine them even desperately trying to force up a pass attempt.
Yeah, I don't think McVay's that stupid, but I've always said this, and it certainly applies here. Players aren't the only ones that choke. Refs choke. Yep. We saw that in the NFC title game.
Sure.
Coaches choke. We saw that in the SEC title game when Kirby Smart called that ridiculous fake punt at midfield on 4th-and-10. So sometimes the moment gets too big for these guys.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the two of these guys and you figure one of them is a little more experienced when it comes to the other. And Belichick, I think, has a significant game management, you know, timeout usage, challenge usage, fourth down usage, you know, advantage in terms of how he manages the clock and manages the game versus Sean McVay, who I think is an incredible coach. There's a lot of things right, but he's really been overly conservative on fourth downs, really struggled to use his timeouts correctly. That's a real point of weakness for him, given his lack of experience.
It's funny you mentioned that. What did you make of the fourth and goal?
Oh,
the call to kick the field goal.
Oh, man. I'm happy they won. I'm happy that didn't cost them the NFC Championship game, but that's just a brutally bad decision. Like, they spent all week after the Cowboys game bragging about how physical they were and how tough they were and how they, you know, they reinforced what they could do on offense by running the football, and that's what their core is. And then they go out and kick a field goal and cost themselves like 11% of win expectancy on fourth and goal from the 1 yard line and hand the ball back to Drew Brees, and you're like, oh yeah, we'll stop Drew Brees, it's fine. I can't believe
it. I'm annoyed. I had the Rams. I had money on the Rams. I was in Vegas. I had money on the Rams, and I was hoping they'd lose because I did not want that play, that decision rewarded.
Yeah, I mean, it was rewarded. Obviously, like, the stuff that had to happen for that decision to go right was pretty remarkable, and it did. And, hey, you know, I think it's an opportunity. I think if you're a better to look at it and say, okay, you know, Sean McVay is pretty conservative, and I think they're going to be comfortable going to Greg Zuerlein if there's a long field goal. So I would look at, you know, long field goal action possibilities with Zuerlein. Even though we kicked a 56-yarder in overtime, and that's a little, you know, a little bit of a recency bias there, I look at, you know, first scoring play as a field goal at 9-2, given that I think McVay's going to be happy to get points on the board. It wouldn't shock me if they kicked a field goal to start the game.
Well, the reason I was asking that, what do you think of the shortest field goal under 27.5 yards? So basically from the 10-yard line in.
I don't know that either of these red zone defenses are all that great.
Right. Realistically. Good point.
I would probably lean towards a field goal being made in that short of a distance, but I don't think I'd feel so confident that I would want to lay anything on it.
Yeah, there's other options out there. But other sharp money they've taken that I really like, I mean, kickoff returns, total kickoff returns. So obviously touchbacks don't count. Under six, they took sharp money on because of Zerline.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I buy that. All right, man. Yeah.
Any others jump out of you?
Maybe Edelman over 6.5 receptions. I just think the Rams are a mess in the slot. They average 9.4 yards allowed per pass in the slot. The league average is 8. They are basically the league average everywhere else on defense when it comes to the passing game, except for slot receivers. And the Patriots are going to test them. I mean, this is going to be a game where you're going to see Gronk split out in the slot, with the possibility of making plays. You're going to see Edelman. You're going to see Hogan. You're going to see Dorsett. You're going to see James White. You're going to see that's going to be the place where the Patriots try to make that action work, is try and exploit the Rams linebackers, exploit the safeties, exploit Robey Coleman, try to win with those guys in the slot. So Edelman, I think even if they don't end up trailing in this game, I think it's going to be a big game for him. So I would be comfortable with most of the Edelman's overs. Even Edelman at Super Bowl MVP at 30-1 wouldn't shock me either.
It's just so tough because, I mean, I did a rant on anyone who bets Brady MVP is an idiot. You just bet the money line. But with that being said, I mean, if James White didn't win it a few years ago with 3 touchdowns, right. I get it. Brady led the comeback 28-3. But,
yeah, it's true.
Yeah, Edelman, man, like, I forget who tweeted it, but like a couple of weeks ago, they're like, if I was building an all time receiving and I had 2 receivers, I'd go Randy Moss and Edelman as my 2.
That's interesting.
I mean, he's such a force.
Yeah. I mean, I think Welker was better in that role than Edelman is, but Edelman's great and he's been great for a long time. And I mean, you know, guy just, he always has that big catch. Like, he always comes up with that play when the Patriots need it. I mean, it's sort of remarkable, and I think it's going to be,
that's the difference. I think with Welker's, Edelman has the hands. Like that catch in the Super Bowl against the Falcons, the comeback. I don't think Welker makes that grab, right? Like
that's true.
Edelman's like fingers are like stronger than any receiver I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean he's a great player. I don't want to take anything away from him, but yeah, I think he plays a big role on Sunday.
Nice, man. Well, look, I know you got a ton going on. You're doing so much writing. You're on the Twitter show with Mina and Diana. So look, I really appreciate your taking the time. I know our listeners really do. And I'm excited about this pod. It's a marathon pod, but I think it's a good insight across the board.
My pleasure, Doug. Thanks so much.
Thanks, dude. And safe travels. Enjoy the game. All right. That concludes this 3-man Super Bowl preview pod. And by the way, Bill Barnwell does an excellent job and he has his own podcast on our platforms. So make sure you check that out. Kai, what's the exact name of that pod?
It's really easy. It's the Bill Barnwell podcast.
Pod. Yeah, that's what I thought it was. It's the Bill Barnwell podcast. Obviously, it's incredible insight. So make sure you guys go check that out. Thanks to Michael Lombardi as well. And thanks to Mr. Director John Murray. Always does a great job. How about some of those remarkable disparities in ticket counts? So he does a fabulous job there. Kai, how do you feel about this game?
Oh, man. I'm excited more about this prop than the actual game because Murray is agreeing with you. He thinks it's a good idea. No touchdown in the first half. I can't see it. So I'm going to be tweeting and texting you guys like crazy.
Hold on. And I meant to ask Barnwell about it. That was the one I forgot. But I said there was good value at 100-1. I didn't say it was going to happen. Okay. Make this my can't miss prop. And the narrative you've made this is kind of ridiculous.
Come on, man. This is the spin, man. This is what we do here.
Come on, man. I've been hanging out at First Take or something. No, like I thought it was ridiculous. And clearly some people bet and drove the price down. And 18-1 is, I think, even a little low. I thought 30 or 40-1. So my 2 cents, who do you got winning, my man?
Oh, man. Well, let me ask you first, because the way I have it scored, we have Murray has the Rams, Mike and Bill both have the Patriots. So let me ask you first who you have.
Then I have the Rams.
You have the Rams.
Yeah.
So I have to break the tie then.
That's true. You do break the tie.
Give me those LA Rams, baby.
Oh, 3 dogs, 2 favorites. We'll see. Can't All right, wait. Bud, thank you so much. Looking forward to connecting back in Bristol. Oh, by the way, do you have any props you like?
I like that Hector. I don't think he's going to throw the ball. Patriots are too swift. They're too smart. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think that might have to get mentioned on SportsCenter this weekend, too.
Yeah.
All right, dude. I appreciate everything. And I look forward to connecting in Bristol next week.
Yeah, man. Travel safe.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.